Hello, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Bruce Thorson. With 2021 nearly wrapped, we thought now would be a good time to take a look back over the year that was and make a few predictions for the year to come. We'll hear what the annual Canada's Food Price Report tells us to expect for 2022. But first, we've convened a roundtable of experts from our publications to weigh in on the big stories from 2021. That's coming right up after a word from our sponsor.
At your Nutrien Ag Solutions retail, we take seed seriously. Getting it right for your farm requires the right knowledge. That's why we operate the largest retail seed trial program in Western Canada. Our local experts can provide you with advice for balancing maturity with disease traits and getting the best seed to your crop. After all, we take your harvest seriously too. Talk to your local retail today or visit NutrientAgSolutions.ca.
First up on the show, our seasonal roundtable.
Welcome to this special edition of Between the Rows podcast. I'm Mike Rain, editor of the Western Producer, and with us today is Lee Hart, the field editor for Grain News, Robin Booker, production editor at the Western Producer, and Ron Lysing, production and machinery and technology analyst at the Western Producer. Welcome, gentlemen. I guess we're reporters all today, talking about what has been happening inside this big world of agriculture and technology in Western Canada as we wind down the year. What's caught your attention? What's making news in your minds? Robin, you want to give us some insights on what you've been seeing?
There's a lot to talk about, but I guess I thought I'd just choose one or two things. And one of the things I see is equipment manufacturers adapting planting technology to kind of fit broad acre production. I think there is a space for planters to take on more acres in the prairies, largely because air seeders can be a little rough on seed, like canola seed or pulse seed. Like if you're getting a 70% germination rate through your air seeder with canola, you're doing pretty well. But planters, you can easily get into the 90% germination rate. And, considering the price of seed, I think there's definitely some savings to be had here. So there's quite a few equipment manufacturers, looking to move into the space. One of the big ones, I guess, would be Bourgault's, their air planter. That's like 76 feet wide with 1,300 bushel commodity tank. So, that's a monster one-pass planting system. And that kind of covers a few of the problems that planters traditionally had, which is you can't really bring a lot of fertilizer with you when you're planting. And growers who like that one-pass planting system, that's kind of a non-starter for them. So, and there's other systems too, with Deere model year 2021, you can get a factory-fit seed plate for their row units. You've been able to buy aftermarket seed plates for the John Deere planters for some time, but I still think it's pretty cool. You can get like a factory fit 90 foot wide John Deere planter that's ready to go for canola. With Vaterstad, their high speed tempo, we've seen this little planter at farm shows for quite a few years, but I've seen a few photos of it with a little commodity cart tied to the back of it. So, and I know they're doing a lot of science with plant emergence and sort of ROI. So as those numbers come in, some farmers might be interested in looking at that. A big story here in Saskatoon is Clean Seed. They're starting to build their Smart Seeder Max S here in Saskatoon at their new facility. And that's a 60-foot platform. It has like 12-inch row spacing, and it can individually meter 5 products at each row. And one of them is a planter. And then another system is interesting is a Horsch Maestro SW, and that can come with canola-ready technology as well. So, I don't think you can bring a lot of fertilizer with that one, but I think what they're looking at is just having a really efficient high-speed planter. When it's time to plant, you can get all your seeds in the ground, and they can get off to a good start. And worry about fertilizing, with different passes, maybe with some of the big broadcast applicators that are available now. So yeah, planters, I don't know. I think that there is some more room on the prairies. What do you think about that, Mike? Do you think there's room on the prairies here for more planters?
Oh, I think it's it. I mean, this idea of getting more precision into that planting system. I mean, Seedmaster started with that a number of years ago on the air seeder side with those precision meter boxes, just trying to get those numbers down. And I mean, realistically, if you can go like, you know, seed price wasn't a big deal for most prairie farmers until more recent times. And as canola prices, in terms of hybrid seed started to creep up and those bags got to be a lot more money. Producers started saying, well, you know, if I could drop from 5 pounds to 3 pounds, I can make a pretty sizable payment on a planter or a seeder at that point. So it's caught people's imagination, I think. And probably, I mean, you think about, you know, that Seedmaster innovation thing extended all the way up into through precision into DOT, what became DOT, and autonomy. And I mean, that's it's a changing world out there, especially with things like autonomy. I think Ron, you've been covering that autonomous side of things. Well, you know, I won't get into how old you are, but you've been covering that. You're older than I am, and that means it's a while. And you've been covering autonomous stuff for a long time now. What did you see in that area this year?
Yeah, Mike, you're right. I've been sort of following this actually way back into the mid-1970s, back in my Grain News days, when Ron Johnson in Saskatoon developed a remote control grain truck so that he could do his harvesting, his combining, and not need a driver for the grain hauler. And then I think Ron Palmer at the University of Regina, again in the, what I recall is the late 70s, was a little bit more technological in his system, but again he was developing remote control grain trucks to eliminate the need for one hired hand. So that idea of a machine, a farm machine, being able to drive around in the fields by itself is not new. It started to become truly autonomous, I think, when Terry Anderson, a fellow from Fargo, introduced his autonomous tractor. And that's the tractor that had no cab, no way that an operator could jump in it. That went virtually nowhere because he was trying to do two things at once. He was trying to make an autonomous tractor that would pull a seeder or a cultivator, but he was also trying to make it electric at the same time. And he was tackling two different areas of technology. And I think it just got to be the best of him. When we're talking about truly autonomous now, there was a company in Ames, Iowa, Smart Ag, in Ames, Iowa, and they demonstrated a product here in Manitoba with Elmer's manufacturing. Mike Friesen down in Altona had one of these. It's called the Smart Ag Auto Cart, and they tried that thing out in, I think it was November of 2018, and this was a cart that was totally driverless, or a tractor rather, that was totally driverless. The equipment could also go on the combine if you wanted to risk that. But I've got a little quote here from a story that I did with Mike Friesen. He says, quote, "I forgot to turn the throttle off and the tractor kept on going when I was out of it. I had to sprint a half mile through corn stalks to catch it." So as much as the manufacturers say that these things are totally safe, I think that little episode shows that you have to you're up and down out of that tractor many times in a day because they were doing testing, but you still have to remember to turn the throttle off, and if you don't, the great big green tractor gets away from you. That was the Smart Ag from Ames, and at the time in 2018. It was selling for $40,000 United States dollars. Now, I think the one that's garnishing the most attention right now is Raven's OmniDrive, and they did a demonstration in Ontario back earlier this fall. And after decades of speculation and decades of waiting for true autonomous machines to come to the field, it looks like the Raven OmniDrive has finally hit the nail on the head. It seems to have, so far, no glitches. Everything seems to work properly as it's designed to do. And on the initial runs, the combine operators said it was a little bit, more than a little bit weird to be driving the combine and then in your mirror watching a truck with no driver, or a tractor rather, with no driver pulling up beside you. It kind of freaked some guys out. But that one is an initial run of 75, I guess you'd call pre-production units, were sold already. At a price of $55,000, and that's a system that will be on the market shortly and in plentiful supply. So the driverless machine finally is here after decades and decades of thinking about it and testing things and trying things out. Raven finally broke through the barrier. And the darn thing is working now. So there we go. That's as much as I know.
Okay. Well, I mean, then some of this stuff does, I mean, it comes from need, I mean, and a bit of ingenuity too, because some of the stuff does obviously start on the farm. I know in, it was about 2016, Matt Reimer was a young producer from Killarney, Manitoba, who automated their grain cart and got quite a lot of attention around the world, actually, as the with some of the video, and that cart definitely and tractor combination definitely, you know, showed just how far individual farmers even still go in developing this stuff. Lee, that I know you were talking to some younger farmers this year about how to take data and use it to, you know, in their management to try and track things. So, I mean, farmer initiative is not completely lost to just big tech companies or even small tech companies. Sometimes it's still happening on the farm.
Yeah, that's, you're right on that, on Michael. This was an interesting topic for me to, to run into or come across my desk anyway, was these young farmers were developing and using QR codes in their around for their various pieces of equipment, just to help them store information on that unit and operating information, that sort of thing. And I'm probably like everybody else in the world, you sort of become more familiar with QR codes in the last couple of years here with during the COVID pandemic, because it's the way to track vaccination for those who are interested in being vaccinated. Well, it's that same coding system that you see there on your for vaccinations, but this project sort of started with a coach in an ag tech coach in Regina, a guy named Taylor Phillips. He has a company called Producer's Edge, and he works with farmers to help them simplify technology. And so anyway, it was Taylor's idea to suggest to some of his clients, well, why don't we try these QR codes and see how useful that is. So anyway, the two farmers I spoke to are Willem van Staveren from Creelman. He's part of a large family farming operation in southern Saskatchewan, and Ben Caver, who's also at Sedley, and he's also part of a multi-generational family farm. These are young guys, so it's not I'm getting old, so my memory fails all the time, but these are young guys, but they see the value of these QR codes, and they've developed them, a number of codes or a code for each piece of equipment. They've got, one for the, a tractor, for example, or they got some for the sprayer, or they got one for the combine. Any unit or operating system that they want to keep track of information. So, and the neat thing is that you can go online. I shouldn't say it's not that difficult. You've got to understand a little bit about the computer, but Phillips has developed a blog and a website. So you can go there and he sort of walks you through. It's about 7 or 8 steps on Google Drive, and it's free. And, you know, you can just walk through that, and you may need a bit of help from somebody who's tech savvy or whatever, but you can go on there and you can create the QR code for a piece of equipment, and you can put anything you want on there. You can just, these fellas, like, they have them for the combine, tractor, sprayer, swather, or whatever. And the idea is, you know, they say that, you know, maybe it's a piece of equipment we only use, once a year, or, you know, we've got, like, with the sprayer, I mean, you've got, or the seeding system, I guess, you know, you've got multiple, fields, you've got multiple crops, you've got, various settings and that sort of thing. So anyway, so they can, create a file of information on how to, sprayer settings, for example, with certain chemicals and spray rates and all this sort of thing, and just put that information on a QR code. And they can even make a small YouTube video, you know, a short YouTube video of them going through the steps, and they can put that on the QR code as well. So the next time they come to, use use the sprayer, they can just, take their camera out or their smartphone out and open up that QR code, and the information is there. It just reminds them of what they used last time for those settings. And they said it's also good because both farms, you know, they've got family members involved, but there's also hired help or whatever. And so I think it was Caver said it was important, you know, they could take a newer operator out and say, here's the seed drill or whatever. And the operator can just open up this QR code, and all the basic information on how to operate that, that feeding system is there. And there could be some videos on there to help them understand things. And as Ben Caver said, he said, rather than, I can go off and he can go off and do something else, and rather than the operator of the seed drill gets stopped and wait for, need to be in touch with Ben to figure out a question or whatever, he can just, look at the QR code, and the operating information, should be there. So they've both been using this just for the last year in 2021, and they both found it extremely helpful, and they can just see where it can, increase the use as the, as time goes on sort of thing. But, it could be, they post, create one for in the farm shop sort of thing that explains, some of the basic, operation of tools or machine shop equipment, that sort of thing. So it's just really any place that you've got information and you want to create a file on it and or a video or whatever, photos. It's just a fairly easy way to store it. And I say the only cost involved, I think it was Willem van Staveren, he said he took his created the QR codes, and then he had to find he went to a print shop somewhere, and he had them, the printer was able to put them on some sort of plastic weatherproof type sticky material, so that if he put it on stuck it onto the side of the swather or whatever, that it's not, the weather isn't going to wreck it right away sort of thing. So that was about the only cost that was involved. And they both said, both farmers said it's fairly simple to use. I think Ben Caver, he said he's got one of his employees is fairly tech savvy. And he said, you can walk through the steps that Taylor Phillips has on his blog. And he said, that's very useful. And he said, but, if they did have a question, they could give Taylor a call. But it was fairly easy to figure out. And they said it's even that they're... the generation older than them, which should be, some guys in their 60s and 70s are, able to figure this out fairly easily. So I don't know if it's going to become a landslide or a widespread thing, but it's just another piece of technology that it's just helps, simplify things and on the farm. And I thought it was a smart idea that you know, basically is free and appears or sounds like it's very useful.
Well, Lee, it looks like that's going to really sort of take out my old dry eraser marker on the inside of the cabs, writing all the instructions and the various need to know things, so anyone can see them. So, well, and it probably costs
keep up the speed there, Mike, and get up to date with things now.
Yeah, I'm going to have to try and get caught up here, and it probably costs less than dry erase marker. So, we got a few minutes left here, and I think, I mean, 2022 is nearly upon us, and that leads us to, you know, everybody wonder what do you think is going to be big next year, Robin? You know, real briefly, as quick as you can, the first thing that comes to your mind, what are we going to see in 2022?
Well, you know, this year, I think I wrote more stories on green technology than any other technology. So, you know, green on green is the ability to identify and target weeds in crop. And there's just a bunch of companies that are starting to release, you know, what's in their pipeline, and some are even coming to commercialization of their products. So, you know, with like Green Eye technology, they'll be launching in the US next year, probably Canada in 2022. BASF Borsch, they'll be coming to Canada probably within a few years. Bilberry, they're already on some sprayers in Australia, so they'll probably be here in Canada within a few years too. And also John Deere, you know, they have their See and Spray. It's just a green on brown system, but it's, you know, camera based. And I got a feeling that they'll be launching something within 2 or 3 years also. So I think that's going to be a really big story moving forward. I think once these platforms are here on Canada and they, you know, prove themselves and sort of adapt their systems to the Canadian fields, I think a lot of farmers will look seriously at getting into them. So,
Ron, the 2022 is what sort of opportunities do you think are going to present themselves, or is there any magic coming?
Well, I don't know if it's magic, but there's still a great deal of mistrust amongst farmers for all of the new electronics and the new computerization. And I think that's been addressed by a technology that's right across the board that's been incorporated into virtually every new machine, and that is machine learning. As a machine makes mistakes or does things right, that data and those factors go into the memory bank and they become part of the machine's function, which means that things that go wrong can be corrected and that mistake can be documented so that hopefully it's not going to happen again. So I think machine learning is going to go a long way toward making these all of these devices more reliable and trustworthy for the farmer.
Lee, last words to you. You know, is there anything else out there that's going to make me obsolete?
No, probably not. But yeah, I think, I don't know what I haven't been to, you know, obviously haven't been that many shows or out in the last few months. But I think, you know, one of the things I gather from, as I look around to, you know, some of the technologists out there, and, you know, I certainly can't grasp it all myself, but, you know, I think what's going to appeal to farmers, you know, certainly in 2022 is anything that's going to help them do some fine tuning and improve efficiency. I mean, those are, you know, probably some old phrases, but they probably become even more critical as we get into 2022 with, input costs increasing and that sort of thing. And it's not necessarily, there's always money for big systems, but, it's anything, I think where a lot of interest is anything that's, you know, can help them become more efficient and, with on-farm trials, that sort of thing. I was listening to a presentation on that yesterday, and right to repair, that was a big topic on the agenda at this meeting I was at. So, you know, it's just being able to reduce their costs and make their dollars go further. I think anything that can help in that regard will be of interest to farmers.
Thanks, Lee. I think I think you're right. I think it's anything that makes it easier for farmers. Anything that's making it cheaper and probably, I mean, overcoming some of the labor constraints in terms of anything you can cause yourself to be running, you know, running fewer pieces of equipment, covering more acres, or maybe at some point, maybe this coming year, we'll start to see even more autonomy. And I know Agritechnica, that might be coming up in February yet. A lot of their awards went out to autonomy again. And so I got to say, at least from my perspective, I think we're going to see even more of it out there, whether it's sprayers on a dot platform or one of the others that are coming up fast. There's going to be a lot of attention given to that. So I'm waiting for something to, the green on green excites me, the ability to have a machine that I don't have to ride on, that's out there recognizing weeds and spraying them. And I could see myself sitting at the side of the field from here forward and not feel too bad about that. But for all of us at Glacier Farm Media, and thanks for joining Between the Rows with Lee Hart of Grain News, Ron Lysing of the Western Producer, and Robin Booker of the Producer as well. I'm Mike Rain. Thanks a lot for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Finally, we're going to hear from Laura Rance, the Vice President of Content here at Glacier Farm Media. As 2021 enters the rearview mirror, Laura has been making her way through the annual Canada's Food Price Report to see what it can tell us about 2022.
As if we didn't have enough to worry about these days, now we're seeing some scary-looking headlines about the rising cost of food. The 12th annual Canada's Food Price Report says a family of four might be spending an extra $966 per year on groceries in 2022, or about $18.50 per week. And prices could go higher. So will we be forced to sell off the family heirlooms just so that we can eat? I'm going to suggest the real question we should be asking is how we've managed to keep the true cost of eating in this country artificially low for so long. Canada's Food Price Report is a collaboration between Dalhousie University and the universities of Guelph, Saskatchewan, and British Columbia. It provides a valuable benchmark of the cost of major food items, as well as some of the underlying drivers. The report quite rightly points out that the forecasted increase of 5 to 7% overall will exacerbate food insecurity that already affects about 12% of Canadian households. It says the impact will disproportionately affect women, Indigenous populations, people of color, and other vulnerable populations. People who live in poverty or in remote northern communities where the cost of accessing food is much higher already spend a higher proportion of their household income on eating. We can't ignore the needs of vulnerable households and communities, especially children. But that's a question for policymakers. And food banks aren't the right answer. However, on average, Canadians spend about 10% of their average household income on food. For most of us, the projected increase amounts to about 1% of the family budget. Are we paying what it really costs to produce the food we eat in Canada? This year's Food Price Report was released at the same time as an Auditor General of Canada report that exposes an atrocious lack of federal oversight over how temporary foreign workers are cared for while working on Canadian farms. The issue of how workers are treated in food production and service isn't limited to the people we bring in from other countries. The Food Price Report pointed out that restaurant positions, even prior to COVID-19, were difficult to fill because they are typically lower-paying jobs with few or no employee benefits. They are physically demanding jobs and prone to harassment and abuse. The pandemic only made things worse. Labor shortages are affecting primary production and food processing too, for many of the same reasons. The Food Price Report highlighted that Canadians are becoming more aware of and much more interested in how their food is produced. It found that consumers' food choices in 2021 were motivated by health and environmental sustainability, with a greater consumer desire for more transparency and ethical practices around food production. One survey found that 71% of consumers want more information about the source of their food. 61% are concerned about the amount of packaging, and 42% would purchase more locally sourced food, even if it costs more. This all tells us that the focus on driving costs out of the food supply chain in the interest of keeping prices low is false economy if those efficiencies are achieved on the backs of workers and the environment. Maybe it's time Canadians started walking their talk. Firstly, by supporting producers, processors, and food sellers that can demonstrate how they're meeting their expectations. And secondly, by understanding that that kind of food costs more to supply. Maybe this is the end of the cheap food era, but if our cheap food system is replaced by a system driven by value, the price might be right. I'm Laura Rantz, Vice President of Content for Glacier Farm Media.
That's our show for this week. From all of us here at Between the Rows, here's wishing you and yours a Merry Christmas. And thanks, once again, for listening to Between the Rows. I've been your host, Bruce Thorson.
At your Nutrien Ag Solutions retail, we take seed seriously. Getting it right for your farm requires the right knowledge. That's why we operate the largest retail seed trial program in Western Canada. Our local experts can provide you with advice for balancing maturity with disease traits and getting the best seed to your crop. After all, we take your harvest seriously too. Talk to your local retail today or visit NutrienAgSolutions.ca.